This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking to the author of a very comprehensive textbook, Nutritional Medicine. It's now in its second edition, so I wanted to take this opportunity to plug Nutritional Medicine. If you're a health professional who listens to Intelligent Medicine, this book is for you because it is literally the Bible of nutritional medicine. It's got an enormous number of references. It covers virtually all the important disease categories with useful therapies and nutritional protocols. It really lays it out. And you can order the hardbound book. I warn you, it's very big. It'll replace your kettlebells as an exercise tool. Or you can use it as a doorstop or even as a weapon. But now I'm very gratified to hear that you can order the electronic version. That is very tempting for me. I think when I get my second edition, I'm going to get the electronic version because I have a hardbound. But then when I want to copy an article, I have to go over to the Xerox machine, and it's a workout. So I'm going to
Right. And the electronic is a searchable PDF. Yeah, you can navigate through it almost instantly, and it's kind of the new wave of books.
Yeah, and for don't be intimidated. If you're a one of our enlightened intelligent medicine laypeople listeners, this book I think is very accessible because it's written in a clear and concise fashion, and can provide you with all the information you want on the supplements that you use. So it's well worth the investment if you're seriously into nutrition. Alan, I wanted to segue into something a little different. You mentioned earlier, you took umbrage at the fact that I said you were an old friend. That's okay because we're sort of chronologically in the same category. You are a big believer in nutrition, integrative medicine. So what do you do to stay healthy these days?
Well, it reminds me of when John F. Kennedy was asked what he's doing for the women's movement these days, and he said, "I'm sure not enough."
Well, you used to be a pretty avid amateur wrestler, I recall, and so that's.
Well, I wrestled in college and made it to the nationals and all that kind of stuff, and my personal experience is if I do a lot of exercise, I'm healthy. I do stay away from sugar. I stay away from trans fatty acids. And I avoid some specific foods that I know I have hidden allergies to. But other than that, I could stand to lose 15 or 20 pounds and I could stand to exercise more. It gets a little harder as you get older. I always quip that I know exactly what I need to do if I want to be healthy. Mm-hmm. The rest is up to the individual, and last I heard, doctors are people too, and we have our own issues and difficulties. But when I'm doing well, I don't eat after 8 o'clock. I do regular exercise. I take a good multivitamin. I take a low dose of thyroid hormone because I self-diagnosed a subtle low thyroid about 25 years ago, mm-hmm. and have felt better on that. And being in my late 60s now, I've started a little bit of DHEA, which some mm-hmm. of your listeners may have heard of. It's a purported anti-aging hormone. And I actually, I had a somewhat lower level. I did the blood test, and there've been some obvious benefits from that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I personally opted for DHEA when I tested myself earlier than you. I tested myself in my early 40s, found my levels were low. And I've been taking it ever since. I haven't looked back. And I think it's safe. It's been beneficial in terms of, helping me maintain energy and focus. And I think it's a good thing to take. Now, and with the caveat that you have to be careful when you take DHEA because DHEA is a hormone. And I think it's best administered under a doctor's supervision. And so since
absolutely.
We're doctors,
and
we
also
can self-administer.
Right. With the old saying, a doctor that treats himself as a fool for a patient.
Right.
One thing I want to point out, I agree with you, this should be, I don't even think it should be sold over the counter.
Exactly.
I think it
yeah.
should be a prescription. But that's a whole other story. Most of the research has been done on 50 milligrams a day or more. And I almost never use those high doses except if I'm treating something like lupus or some mm-hmm. other serious mm-hmm. disease. For women, I would typically use 5 to 15 milligrams mm-hmm. a day, and for yep. men, 10 to 20 milligrams a day. And it seems to work as well as, if not better than, what the research with higher doses suggests. So, mm-hmm. so there's the safety factor there, and again, do it with a doctor's supervision.
Indeed. And you are a particular fan of vitamin B6, pyridoxin, having written a book about it that was back in 1984, but it was an eye-opener
yeah,
to me because
yeah.
that's one of those vitamins that, you know, sort of the Rodney Dangerfield B vitamin. It doesn't get any respect, but you kind of rocketed into prominence with your discussion of many ways in which it can be beneficial.
Well, the reason I got interested in that is because I was going to the library all the time and finding all these studies in nutrition, and something clicked. 2 points. Number one, all these diseases were all of a sudden being reported to get better with vitamin B6 supplementation, and these same diseases either were unheard of 30 or 40 years before, or they had become more common. At the same time, there was evidence that there were certain environmental pollutants being dumped into the environment that interfere with vitamin B6 utilization in the body. So it was kind of like the environment making us need more vitamin B6, and here's what's happening to us. And most of that research, if you read this book, even though it's 33 years old, it's surprisingly current. There have been newer studies, but they all pretty much say the same thing. So, B6, and I almost always use magnesium with vitamin B6 because they work together in the body.
Indeed. And, you know, I happen to have gone to a medical school where a guy in the Department of Neurology there wrote an article for a medical journal about the toxicity of B6. He started seeing a lot of women coming into his practice who he alleged were ODing on B6, that it was causing them neuropathy, that it was causing them difficulty balancing, and that kind of led people to be fearful of taking high-dose B6. Do you give credence to those concerns?
Well, I do. Was that Dr. Schomburg that
exactly.
you worked with?
Exactly.
Yeah. I discuss his work in my book. There are definite adverse effects when using massive doses of nutrients in some cases. We know, for example, you can poison yourself with too much zinc or vitamin B3 or copper or selenium. And B6 was one of the ones that was added to the list back then. But you got to take an extremely large dose. 500 milligrams a day for a long period of time is what people were using. And so
for PMS,
I
believe.
Reason.
I think it was popular for PMS for a while.
They were.
Yeah.
Yes. And I typically recommend 50 to 100, occasionally 200 milligrams a day for some people. And if they're on 200 or more, I think it's a good idea every once in a while to do a simple neurological exam. But there's only one case report published anywhere of a dose lower than 500 milligrams a day causing this, and that one is questionable because the person was never examined. They were just interviewed over the telephone after
yep.
responding to an ad. So if you're down at the 50 to 100 milligrams, as far as I know, there's never been any major problems from that.
Is it helpful for carpal tunnel syndrome in your experience? Because it's been touted for that.
It is, yeah. The research is conflicting, but my clinical experience shows that about half of people have a clear benefit. There are various types of carpal tunnel syndrome. There's an overuse injury, which probably does not respond that well to B6. And
somebody
there's
who's
one
a,
related
a jackhammer
to,
or something like that. They've damaged their
right.
nerves, and there's nothing much you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. But carpal tunnel during pregnancy, carpal tunnel syndrome associated with diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis, these are more of a metabolism problem than an overuse problem. And those kinds are much more likely to respond to vitamin B6.
And there's some application of vitamin B6, I believe, in preventing chemotherapy neuropathy. That's one of the things that it may help.
Some with that. We also use it for asthma. There's some moderate benefit there. Premenstrual syndrome, I think you mentioned before. And then you can prevent some of the side effects from other drugs like tuberculosis drugs. There's some work with treating hyperactive kids. So there's a lot of different things. And I don't want to imply that one nutrient is like a magic bullet, because it's not. Nutrients, actually, we don't use them that way. We try to do a comprehensive approach, including diet and including a broad spectrum of supplements at moderate doses. But every once in a while, you got to use a pretty large dose of one or another nutrients, and B6 sometimes is in that list.
You know, you sometimes take an iconoclastic or skeptical view of some of the current fads in integrative medicine. Do you care to weigh in on some of them?
Well, there's one that I've been pretty vocal about. I did talk about this in the first edition of Nutritional Medicine, and I was kind of alone to some extent. And in the second edition, there's much stronger evidence to support it. And that is, and you know, this might be iconoclastic, but I think the modern idea of testing everybody for vitamin D deficiency and using high doses of vitamin D to bring their numbers up has neither been proven to be safe nor proven to be effective. Hmm. And there is reason to believe the following. The laboratory testing is completely inaccurate. They don't even know what they're measuring.
Yeah.
The observational studies that show that low vitamin D levels are associated with certain diseases, which is true, may have nothing to do with vitamin D. It may simply be due to the fact that vitamin D levels drop with inflammation, and all those associations might prove is that if you have inflammation, you're sick, and if you don't, you're not.
Right.
The best way to do this, the research, is to look at controlled trials where you compare high doses of vitamin D to low doses, and what they're finding so far, it's not definitive, but the body of evidence supports the concept that higher doses are less effective than lower doses. So, that's one. I'm out there talking about this, and, a lot of people come up and say, "Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I'm gonna change." I felt very uncomfortable giving people 5 and 10,000 units a day of vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
One of my good friends in the holistic community, who's in his 70s, told me that he got himself on this bandwagon, and he'd never had a kidney stone in his life. He started 5,000 a day of vitamin D because of his numbers, and within a month he had a kidney stone.
Wow. And you tend to favor raising your vitamin D by, you know, the old-fashioned way, and you actually believe that there may be some qualitative difference to the vitamin D that your body manufactures with sun exposure compared to oral vitamin D, or am I getting that correct?
No, that's right. I always quip that John Denver never said a vitamin D pill on my shoulder makes me happy.
Right.
It's always the sunshine. And if you look at the biochemistry of sunshine, it's pretty fascinating. And you also have to remember that humans did not have any vitamin D in their diet unless they ate pterodactyl eggs or lived right by the sea and got some fish.
Right.
So vitamin D is really not even a vitamin. It's a sunlight-derived pre-hormone. And some other things that sunlight does, it's amazing. The ultraviolet light goes through your retina, stimulates your pineal gland, and then stimulates your pituitary and all the glands downstream. It also produces a hormone in the skin known as corticotropin-releasing hormone, and that's a hormone that we learned in medical school is made in the brain.
Oh.
And all of a sudden we find out it's made in the skin.
Wow.
It's a very powerful hormone.
New factoid.
And, and there's a third point, and that is that when you expose yourself to ultraviolet light, there are certain metabolism products of vitamin D that actually modulate the effects of vitamin D. So whereas you can block some of the adverse effects from sunlight-derived vitamin D by producing these breakdown products, there's no evidence that you can do the same when you take vitamin D pills.
Mm.
People come along and say, well, sunlight never made anybody toxic in vitamin D. Well, that may be true, but that does not prove that vitamin D pills are safe.
Hmm. Right. Yeah, it's a different thing. Another one that you expressed some skepticism about is megadosing with iodine.
Right. Iodine is actually a very powerful substance. You can kill funguses, you can kill viruses, you can kill bacteria. So a lot of people, you know, we were talking before about dysbiosis in the previous segment. Mm-hmm. If people have unwanted organisms in their intestinal tract, one way to get rid of them is to take a medicinal dose of iodine, which is dozens, if not hundreds of times higher than the nutritional dose. And that is drug therapy. And I've seen people over the years who told me that taking large doses of iodine made them feel so dramatically better and got mm-hmm. rid of chronic problems. Mm-hmm. And I believe them. But that does not speak to these claims that everybody needs to take massive doses right. of iodine as a nutrient. And I think there are harms that have been demonstrated mm-hmm. from that. Mm-hmm. And I think the laboratory tests that they use to allege that people need large amounts are erroneous lab tests.
I've seen some people with chronic sinusitis benefit from therapeutic doses of iodine, almost as if it was an anti-infective agent working deep within their tissue.
Well, that's interesting, and that's a good use of iodine, and I would agree that when you want to get some organisms deep in there, iodine is one certain way to go. But there are some people out there saying that everybody needs 80 times the recommended yep. dietary allowance, and that's going to shut off people's thyroids, or it's going to make them overactive thyroid. I've seen horrible gastrointestinal side effects. I've seen severe acne. So I'm a little skeptical. The one thing that you have to be aware of, don't take this high-dose iodine during pregnancy. That's not controversial anymore. There have been a number of kids that have been born with non-functioning thyroid glands that were directly attributed to the mother taking multiple milligram doses of iodine during pregnancy. People should take about 200 or so micrograms, that's a fifth of a milligram, of iodine per day during pregnancy, not many thousands of micrograms.
And that's what you could get from a kelp supplement, or often that's the amount that's in an ordinary multi.
A small kelp yep. supplement, yeah.
Yep, right. Let's give people the information about your great new book, or actually, your new old book, Nutritional Medicine.
Yeah, well, they can read sample chapters at my website to get an idea whether it's appropriate for you. The website is drgaby.com. It's spelled out drgaby.com. We've got chapters on migraines up there. We've got a couple other different chapters that people can peruse through.
Sample chapters.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's available in hardbound edition, which some people like. But for convenience and also for searchability, I'm really pleased to see that there's a new option, which is the electronic edition in PDF, which is searchable, which is really great because, let's say you want to find out about, thyroid, and there's, you know, 15 chapters where you mention the benefits of thyroid. So this tells you where all the references to thyroid might be.
Tells you where every one of them are by searching the word. You can also, the index and the table of contents are hyperlinked. So if you scroll through the index and you see something you like, you just click on it and it takes you right to that page. It's really cool.
I'm there. I'm totally there. I'm going to get myself the electronic edition. And I hope that some of you listeners will consider it because it, I think, will be a cornerstone of your nutritional resources. Alan Gaby, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you very much for, you know, maintaining a vigil on this very important field, approaching it with an open mind, critically, and you know, sometimes not succumbing to you know, fads or enthusiasms, which may be transient and which ultimately may not stand the test of time. So I think your approach
is really
reasonable.
Well, thank you, and I have to say the same about you. I've known you a long time, and I could say that about you, having been an iconoclast yourself and doing great medicine and teaching others about it.
Well, thank you so much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com.